I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And welcome, everybody. Oh, Max. You know what? We're going to start right off. Let me introduce right from the get-go just one of my favorite dudes I just met today. His name is Mike Geiger. He is the guy that owns all the Moe's Southwest Grill in Pittsburgh and in Erie, and he's up here. He is dispersing some beautiful burritos, whatever. What do they call them, Mike? What do we got?
Well, I can't do anything without starting with welcome to Moe's.
Yeah, I was about to say, yes. You got to say welcome to Moe's. That's the move.
So, wow, that was sensational. I totally whiffed on that one, and I know better. I've been there enough times. And by the way, I will tell you, Max, because you haven't met Mike yet, I was a little suspicious on how good it could be because the guy is skinny. I mean, you know, you don't think somebody from Moe's Southwest Grill is going to be a lightweight. But he is a lightweight, but wow, he's a heavyweight and good food, let me tell you.
Great stuff. And Max, I do have to share that everyone's having a little fun at your benefit that they're missing, that you missed all the display we had. We launched a new protein, a shredded beef birria.
Ooh.
Birria.
Oh, did you hear the little tongue roll? Huh?
You got to roll the R's. Got to roll the R's.
It's delicious. We just started, so everyone's enjoying it. And
you got a special today.
Yeah, we're all enjoying it, Max.
It's fantastic. So since it's so great, it's so special, it's brand new. We've got it in all of our locations in Pittsburgh and Erie. We decided, let's have some fun. It's February 1st. It's kind of gray and dull outside. Let's be interesting. Every person in Pittsburgh and Erie, free entree today at Moe's. No charge if you order our new birria. We want you to taste it. We want you to try it. Free birria entree per person all day February 1st in Pittsburgh.
Man, that's sensational. Max, how many birrias do you think you could scarf down?
Well, listen, as a guy that lives in Arizona, I can appreciate a good birria taco.
Birria.
Birria.
Birria. Yeah.
It's extra tasty for breakfast.
I imagine so. I imagine so, guys, as I eat my Tasmanian cherries. Okay. It's awesome. Here's a question. Are you dipping the tacos as well, like traditional, like birria style, or do you put it in anything? The beef is the birria with the sauce, and then you can wrap it up.
That's correct. So it's slow roasted. It's in a great broth.
Wow.
Other thing that we're doing, we've got these awesome red hard taco shells we bought for the month of February. You know, we wanted to kind of say, you know, a loving thing, but we're rolling those in our hard rock sauce. So it's like 6 different peppers. It's blazing hot.
Wow.
So you throw the birria in a blazing hot crunchy shell and
wow,
legit.
You'll be sweating. You'll be sweating there.
No doubt. But it is delicious.
I'm truly jealous. I'm truly jealous.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to lie. You don't really get jealous. Well, except for when, you know, Caliente's pizza comes in and
right.
Moe's comes in and I don't even get to try it. So, okay. Welcome to Moe's.
Absolutely. Mike, I want to thank you for stopping in. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
That's awesome.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me. Pittsburgh, looking forward to seeing you today.
Absolutely. Again, one more time. All day, what?
All day, Pittsburgh and Erie, 12 locations, Moe's Southwest Grill, free birria entree.
And you got to say it with a tongue roll, right? You got to get a little.
Got to try it.
Got to roll the R's. Okay, thank you so much, Mike Geiger.
Gentlemen, thank you.
One of my favorite human beings
now.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, brother. We enjoyed that so much. Oh, what a joy that is. You don't know breakfast until you come up and birria out. Birria out, right? I mean, that is just the way to do it.
Yeah.
That's the way to start it off. Yes.
Birria.
You know, Max, for all the wonderful weather you got,
Why not?
You got to be tortured a little bit.
That's how you're going to feel later on today. When you run outside the building.
Max, you'll be proud of me, Max. When Mike was making us our tacos earlier, he was like, "Hey, we got this six pepper hot pepper shell taco. You want to try it?" And I said, "Mike, partner, if it was dinner time, heck yeah. But it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I gotta be careful here." Yeah.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Nobody wants a muddy situation going on.
Yeah, okay? Exactly, and we'll just leave it at that. Yeah. Okay, now, Speaking of, kind of like situations, there was one that occurred the other night in the AFC Championship game, which I thought was funny. We never quite got around to talking about it. But it had to do with Justin Tucker warming up in pregame in the Kansas City Chiefs end of the end zone. And it was just something where Travis Kelce talked about Justin Tucker poking the bear. You know, Max, come along. Yeah. Pat Mahomes is warming up down around the goal line, and it's kind of like, kickers have access to both ends of the field, right? Because you need weather conditions. You got to be able to kick. But the way – you got to stay away from the other players. So if Mahomes is there already and warming up, you can't come along and try to pervade his space, even vice versa. I mean, as Pat Mahomes said in post-game, he said, look at – I've been doing this for 7 years, and the only times that I've had any problem at all with some kicker was 3 times in Baltimore, which tells you about it. So I thought it was kind of funny when Travis came over and kind of kicked the tee and kicked his helmet out of the way and everything.
Yes. Oh, my God. That was funny. I'm not going to lie. Hey, you know what? Here's my thing. You should know better, Justin Tucker, right?
Right.
You're going into the Kansas City time. This is their dedicated time to warm up. And you're purposely putting stuff in. You're stretching. Like, you should have stretched on your end. By the time you come down there, you should be just kicking the ball. It's not let me limber up here. Let me do some calisthenics. You know, Patrick Mahomes is trying to get his reads and his timing down on his throws. He's also got TK down there.
Right.
Or TKS, Travis Kelce Swift, down there.
And, little shot there.
Yeah. How are we going to word this? I mean, because we've already got, my one buddy was like, oh, so is this Super Bowl Swifty 8? So, huh? Gotta give a shout out to my guy, Keith Reese.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. But I mean, where are we at with, there's a sanctity to it, Long gone are the days of Joey Porter where you could stalk the 49.99-yard line and yell at people.
Yeah.
And you could be nose-to-nose. I mean, kickers kind of get that Switzerland-type immunity because they have the kick on both ends. But at the same time, you can't interfere with the other team. Now, you might get some younger dudes that, might kowtow to that. You might be able to punk a Tua Tagovailoa or, some younger guys in this league. But Pat Mahomes ain't having it, and this is playoff time. And Travis Kelce darn sure ain't having it, I mean, as evidenced by the fact that he took his helmet, threw his helmet and the balls. And listen, if there was anything – if his shoes were off, he probably would have thrown those two. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I think of all the people to send down as an intimidator, I'm not thinking about my kicker being the intimidator.
No. I got a big old tight end that can walk over and – boop. I noticed that nobody came to Justin Tucker's defense.
Yeah, because they were all on their end, like they were supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. come on. You got a kicker going to plant himself right in the middle of where the most famous quarterback in the NFL right now is warming up and think, you're going to get away with that? Were you in the era of Vontaze Burfict?
Yeah, I was young Vontaze Burfict.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so,
kicked out of ASU, Vontaze Burfict.
Okay, yes. Do you remember the one game when he ran through the warm-up of the Steelers? Do you remember that? It was in Cincinnati, I believe it was.
Yeah, it wasn't during my time, but yes, I do remember watching and seeing that. That was right after I left.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I couldn't remember. That's the one problem with getting old like this. You're not sure where, generations and and decades and divisions.
Yeah, where they start, and where they end. It's like,
pretty soon
we're the North. We're not the Central, right? Yeah, there it is. Okay, got it. We're on par.
At some point in time, I'm going to be talking about playing in the AFC North instead of the Central, right?
Exactly.
No, you weren't there. That was before.
Hey, man, we got the Houston Oilers coming up this week. Wait a second. Hold on. Whoa. Time out. I know you saw some throwback jerseys. Those are in Tennessee, A, and B, they're called the Texans. Not a division rival.
You know, exactly. I mean, you think about it. Joey Porter. I mean, the two of them, him and William Green, you know, going at it.
Oh,
pre-game.
My gosh. Yeah, I was definitely there for that one.
Right, right.
That was wild. That was my second year in the league.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one vividly.
Do you remember watching the thing as it was getting heated?
Yeah, because I was laying down doing toe touches. We're doing the runner stretch.
Okay, right.
And you're just looking forward. And, you know, Peasy doesn't stretch. You know, Peasy is already stretched. So the only thing that he's done is he's greased up his abs, you know, Hawaiian right. Tropic style. Right. Has a jersey rolled up so you can count every single one of his six-pack. And he's just walking up and down the line, just barking at everybody. And you're just like, all right, well, there it is. There's the intimidation. The Lawrence Taylor style type of intimidation you're talking about, Wolf, right?
Right.
You go up and down. That was Peasy's job. It was like a pit bull off the leash, but he had that invisible fence. He wasn't allowed to cross the 50. So he's just stalking. And William Green wasn't having it. He walked up. Now they're nose to nose. And I'm like, listen, this is an imaginary line. This is not a real line. And William Green found out that it wasn't – there's no force field up there that protects him from the 50.
That's right. William Green found out there was no invisible dog fence there.
Yeah, exactly. His head never went across, but his fist definitely did.
Yeah, did that count as a penalty? His head, he never stepped over the 50, but his fist came over the 50.
The crown of his helmet never broke the 50-yard line, just saying. What do we count here?
I like that. That's great. The fist definitely went over the 50.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't count. The nose of the football wasn't there. We're good.
Yeah, exactly. So, oh my. Oh, I remember. Oh, and then you got the Vontaze Burfict thing. Like, I can't remember anything like that going on but I do remember, you know, was it Dwight White was talking about how in the first Super Bowl against the Vikings that they played in, and that they were lined up side by side in the tunnel. And he said the smack talking that went on. He said, we knew we had him beat. Had him beat right there. Just knew that the Vikings were – it was really funny the way he – you can't do it justice without Mad Dog telling it, because he was just too funny telling it. But he had a former college teammate in the other on the Vikings, and the guy wouldn't talk to him and stuff like that. And I think it was either him, was it Mel Blount or – no, J.T. Thomas. That's who it was. J.T. And it was really funny listening to him describe how there was this go back and forth pregame. And JT said, when we were in the tunnel, we knew we had the game won. That's what he said.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there are no friendships when it comes to winning championships. Like, we can be friends before, we can be friends after. We are not going – I don't know you. You are – as Mike Tomlin would say, you're a nameless gray face until the clock hits zero in the fourth quarter, right? I don't care who I have to step on in the process. I mean, I played a lot of former teammates and friends. Listen, right. After the game, we can get all the photos together we want, right? You know.
Exactly
now it's a jersey exchange, but I'm like, you know, it used to be, hey, we could take a photo, you know, go find Fabus. Fabus will come snap a shot, put it in your locker.
Fabulous
know, on Monday
Mike
or
Fabus.
Tuesday.
Yep.
God, I miss Mike. I miss Fabus.
Absolutely. All right. You know what? We're going to go to break early, though, Max, because we got the legend, Donnie Schell, coming up at 10:20. You don't want to miss this, folks. Donnie Schell, the human torpedo, coming at you from the locker room. Wolf Starks and the Ninjas coming up.
This. This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You know, I love this segment when we bring some of our buddies in that we played with, our teammate section. You know, he played 14 seasons, 201 games, 51 career interceptions, 5 times a Pro Bowler, three times first-team All-Pro, class of 2020, Hall of Fame, and still the NFL strong safety career interception leader with 51. That's Hall of Famer and Steelers Hall of Honor member Donnie Shell. Donnie, welcome, brother. It's great to have you.
Hey, Whoopi, how you doing, man? Good to hear your voice, boy.
Exactly so. You're on. You've got Max, and he's in Phoenix right now, so he's coming in also into the locker room here. So he's long distance, but I know he wants to say hi.
What's up, Donnie? How we doing?
You're doing great, Max. How you doing, man?
I'm blessed. I can't complain, sir. Always good to talk to you.
There you go. There you go. I like y'all sponsor, too. The Ford F-150. That's my truck.
Oh, there you go, man. We're just doing
there
it.
There we go.
Yeah. That's a great truck, too. All right, so, Donnie, I got to ask you. When the Steelers were going through their plague on the safeties, we lose like 3 or 4 safeties. Did the Steelers call you? Now, I know, you know, you're like 70, 71, somewhere in there, but still, you could buckle it up short term, right, buddy?
I can go just on third downs, Whoopi.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, the thing about it is, Donnie, I sit here and I go, you're still the strong safety career interception leader with 51. You come from an era, we come from an era, when the quarterbacks were only putting the ball in the air 15 to 20 times a game, and yet here you are still with that interception record. And I remember, was it Cleveland 81 when you had 3 in 1 game? Gadzooks, man.
Yeah, that was a great game. Very memorable game for me. I just tried to catch the one that's come to you, man. If you do, you lead the league.
Oh, my gosh.
Go ahead, Max.
Now, Donnie, you know, I mean, when you kind of assess it, and you've had a 14-year career, and, you know, when you look at kind of how a team evolves and changes from year to year, you know, you look at what the Steelers are doing. They're going through a change, especially offensively, with not only coaching, but, you know, there will be the inevitable, you know, personnel changes that happen, that plague every team now with the free agency. How is it as a leader on a team? How is it to rally the troops and get up for the next season, especially when, you know, the season ends so abruptly for a team trying to make that push?
Yeah, you got to have just have resolve, man. You know, I used to, when I was in high school, when we lost the game, I used to cry. But I promise the Lord I won't cry anymore, because I'm going to give you 100% on every play, every practice, every play. And then that changed my attitude. So you got to have some resolve. You know, sometimes when you have goals and aspirations, they don't come true, and then you just got to figure out why first. You got to know why and what you need to do to correct yourself during the offseason and go back to work, man.
Donnie, one of the things that is so significant in your career was the fact that you were part of one of the greatest legendary classes of draftees and signees. You got 4 Hall of Fame members from one class as far as drafted, but you were the 5th, and finally, we're so grateful that in 2020 you became a member of that Hall of Fame, baby. But the fact is, you got 5 Hall of Famers from 1 year. I can't even begin to understand how the Steelers were able to pull that draft off.
It was a special draft. Like John Starks went in the 4th round, and I was undrafted free agent. I mean, I think they had Bill Narnose, and everybody was there. They did a great job of looking for talent. And, you know, you never know who's going to be or where, what school they come from. It really didn't matter to Chuck Knoll. He just want to know, did you get 100%, and you can't make a whole lot of mistakes.
He did not tolerate that very well, did he?
No, that was a thorn in his side.
Yeah, Donnie, you know, I mean, looking back on your career, and like Wolf said, I mean, having all of these Hall of Famers, but, you know, obviously you don't realize it. That's more of a post-career type of honor. I mean, how was it in practice? How was it, especially on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, the competition, the communication, like you said, Chuck Noll didn't tolerate mistakes. But I felt like there was also a level of player accountability on those side of the balls. Like when you talk to those guys, you know, talking to a Dwight White, and talking to an L.C. Greenwood and Mel Blount, like, how was that player accountability, and how did you guys hold yourselves to a standard even more so than what Chuck Noll could hold you to?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the players. You know, the coaches have his philosophy, but I think the players have to carry it out. And our practices were so intense and competitive that we didn't have a problem with games, because if I can cover John Sowers and Lynn Swann, Benny Cunningham and Larry Brown at tight end in practice, I thought I could cover anybody in the National Football League. And I didn't want people catching any passes on me, and they didn't want us to stop them. So it got kind of competitive.
Very much so. Now, let me ask you this. Let's put you in today's shoes. You're sitting there. You got to cover Travis Kelce. All right, he's got, what, 11-year guy? He's got 23 catches and 262 yards, 3 TDs in 3 postseason games this year. Donnie, you're out there, strong safety. How do you cover him?
I would not cover him from an off coverage. I would always bump and run him. And that restricts the quarterback timing, and does a lot of things to him in coming off the line of scrimmage. He just can't sit back there and I'm going to play off. That's the worst thing you can do, is to play off of a very talented tight end like that. You got to get in, disrupt him, disrupt the timing of the quarterback, and make him go somewhere else.
No, absolutely. And I think, Donnie, you know, the rules have changed a little bit. You know, I think the tight end has become that weapon because they changed that 5-yard, you know, kind of halo rule where after 5 yards, you can't redirect them. How tough is that for a safety, especially if you're filling in the box off of a play action or something, and you're after 5 yards, I can't touch that guy. I mean, how tough is that from a safety perspective, especially when you have some of those late fills or you're dropping down, you know, to be in that curl flat area so that those guys don't have that safety blanket?
Oh, well, it's definitely tougher coverage than when I first came in the league. And as a matter of fact, Wolf, that's the Mel Blount rule. Mel Blount changed that rule.
Yeah.
We played Dallas in the Super Bowl in '76. But anyway, but it's a lot tougher coverage. But you got to adapt with the times. If that's what the coverage called for, then you got to do the best you can to get your hands on him and disrupt him and let him go after 5. So, you know, you can't touch him after that. So you just got to play within the rules. And you know, sometimes you tug on the jersey a little bit, so you kind of hold it a little bit.
there's a true master right there giving a description of it. Donnie, I got to ask you one last thing, because I know you're on a timeline. We're going to let you go. I promised you I'd get you out of here by 10:30. But I got to ask you, how did you make the transition from a linebacker in South Carolina State to safety for the Steelers? It seems like 2 different worlds.
Yeah, Coach Willie Jeffers came in my senior year at South Carolina State, was the head coach. And he brought, I forget what the coach's name was, but he put in the 4-3 defense, Wolf.
Bud Carson?
And then my coach, I forget his name right now, he played with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay.
And he brought in the 4-3 pro-type defense, and all the coverages we put in the ran from the 4-3, some of the Cincinnati old coverages and stuff. So so it made it pretty easy for me, because I played basketball and baseball, football, and ran track in high school. So it related man-to-man covering guys was related kind of like man-to-man in basketball for me. So I just translated. That's why I think you need to play a lot of different sports today, because it helped me make that transition to safety.
That's excellent. And, brother, I promised you out at 10:30. I'm getting you out at 10:30. But I love you. I thank you for all you've been in my life. You've helped to pour life into me as a young rookie, I remember. And I thank you always for the time spent with you. It's always been a pleasure. Thank you, my brother.
Yeah, thank you, Wolf. Love you too, man. Love you, Max. You guys have a great show. Continue the good work.
Thank you so much.
All right,
appreciate
thanks,
you. And that is one of the all-time greats. Man, oh, man, I still get tingles because, well, if you had been on the receiving end of a Donnie Shell hit like I have, you still get tingles when you know, that one up at training camp when I was leading on a sweep and he came up and he T-boned me and launched me to the one hop to the feet of Chuck Knoll. I remember Chuck looking down at me, and he goes, "It's not very impressive, young man." And all I could think of in between the stars I was seeing after Donnie laid me out was thinking, "You didn't see the hit? Boy, that was – I thought it was impressive."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Trust me. Trust me, Coach. I know from this end where you're at, but listen, living through that car wreck, you know, it was more than enough. It's more than enough. We're good. We're good here. Nothing to see here. Next play.
Oh, man. I mean, think about this. 51 interceptions, dude, in a day and age when the quarterbacks were only throwing 20 times a game, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, could you imagine in today's NFL how many interceptions Donnie Shell would have?
Oh, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know? And,
I mean,
and the
he would have an exorbitant amount.
Could you imagine Donnie Shell and Troy Polamalu in the same defensive secondary?
Oh, wow. Nope. Can't even do that because once again, you never see a ball in the air in the middle of the field. I guess I can make this comment now. Are we statute of limitation? Is it over with, Wes?
We got
that. Yeah, lawyer Wes says it's fine.
Okay. All right.
Check with our legal team real quick. Yeah, it's good.
All right. Yeah, it looked like a Matt Canada offense every week. They wouldn't throw to the middle of the field.
Boom.
I did it.
You went there.
I did.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, you think about that. In one draft class, you got Swan, Stallworth, Jack Lambert, Mike Webster and Donnie Shell. I mean, that's just unbelievable. That type of grouping of Hall of Famers to be. Wow.
Well, and Donnie was an undrafted free agent. Think about that gold mine find.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, that just puts the icing on the cake. It's like the fact that all of you had multiple opportunities in the league to take this guy and you didn't. And we were able to swoop in, sign him, and boom, he's got a bronze bust in Canton, and he'll live on forever.
Oh, man,
poo-poo on you, other 27 NFL teams, because it was back in 28 teams, right?
Yeah.
Was it 28 teams in the league?
Yeah, it was when I first came in the league.
I want to make sure my historical math was correct. But I mean, it's phenomenal to think about that. And then just his – and also his faith, right? I mean, such a strong, godly man, believer in God. And he brings that everywhere. You know, I had the pleasure. I've done some events with Donnie.
Yeah.
We went to Mexico, did a football camp down there, and just getting to spend time with him. Because normally, you know, when the Steelers legends would come back and they talked to us when we were rookies, it was a roundtable type discussion, open forum. And then you wouldn't really have any other time, you know, with him afterwards. But, you know, when you're going to these events, you're riding in the van together. You know, I was blessed. I had Rocky and Donnie with me. And just tell the stories on the bus rides and then sitting at breakfast, at dinner, you know, and just laughing and telling stories. And, you know, we had Bud Dupree and Terrell Edmonds also with us. So just those guys just looking wide-eyed, right, you know, listening to these legends and Super Bowl champs and Hall of Famer, you know, tell these stories. It's a very unique situation in Pittsburgh that you have that many people to draw from that can pour life into you, that can share their experiences. You can have those personal conversations because more often than not, they've been through them. They understand that perspective, and they're still a teammate to this day. I think that's what's really special, really separates the Steelers from a lot of other organizations in all of professional sports, not just football, but all of professional sports, and why they are held to a gold standard for a lot of teams. And that's why you see, you know, so many branches from the Steelers tree, right? When you're talking about going and becoming parts of other organizations, you know, former minority owners becoming, you know, majority owners in other places, is because of the foundational, you know, cornerstones that they have within this organization, that it's more than just the team of now. It's you lend yourself from the history of those teams, and you let the stories of the past, you know, breathe life into the future as well.
You know, the thing about Donnie that I remember so distinctly, you know, you talk about a godly man. He follows hard after Jesus, as do I. And I remember when my dad passed away in training camp, my third year in the league. And I remember Donnie saying to me when I came back, because it was during training camp, and I immediately went up and then turned right around and came back after, and came back to camp. And I remember Donnie, the first thing he did was, he said, Wolfie, he said, come on over here. Let me pray for you. Just prayed for, and just, you know, when you talk about accountability to teammates, sometimes you got to get a little muddy in your teammate's life, because there's life issues that are going on behind the scenes. You know, that's what I'm talking about when you got leadership, like you call them, the locker room elders, you know, that come along and speak into your life, that sit down with you and tell you or share with you their experiences that really pull you in, you know what I mean, and really kind of give you something to hang on to. You know, is, you know, losing my dad at that age as a young guy, you know what I'm talking about, it's hard. The you know, the suddenly to become the man in the family and got to watch over your siblings and your mom, you know, and take care of that. It's something that I wasn't quite ready for, but, you know, I had enough of the locker room elders around me that could speak into my life, and I could ask questions, and they would share. And there was, it's just a way of, you know, cultivating that culture in the locker room that is, you know, caring about your teammates.
No, absolutely, Wolf. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things when you're talking about successful locker rooms or successful teams, you know, having those elders, veterans in that room, and those guys being able to ingratiate themselves with the younger guys.
Right.
And that relatability. And like you said, you know, helping establish and bridging the gap between the young guy and the older guy, and knowing that you're not in this alone. Like, you know, we are here as, you know, to a lesser degree, like a hive mind. You know, we've all been through different things. You're, you know, the whole thing, you're not unique in your life experiences. You know, they're unique to you because you're going through them at this time, but that doesn't mean that nobody else has gone through those in their lifetime, or gone through similar circumstances.
Right.
Or those shared experiences being able to be relayed almost like, you know, tribal stories around the fire, you know, like everything's written. Some things is an oral history and an oral experience where
that's,
you can share
true.
And impart that knowledge. You know, it's a special thing, and successful organizations have that pipeline. They have that consistency. And like you said, bringing your legends around and your former players to be a part of the current team, in a sense where you have access. You know, we could, I mean, how many guys do we see up at training camp that are just sitting there at the dining hall?
Yeah.
You know, and the ability to walk up and ask a question,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just say, hey, can I sit with you guys? And guys are available. I mean, I can't tell you how invaluable it is. If I'm a safety and seeing Minka Fitzpatrick and Mel Blount talking, how cool is that?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Like it's something that does not happen. Ryan Clark comes in, and you got the entire defensive backfield over there talking to Ryan. You know, it's a special situation when you have that opportunity to do that, because not everywhere has that. Not everywhere grants that access to that, to quote unquote the network or the knowledge bank that is Steelers history.
Exactly so. You know, the funny part was, it just occurred to me, I posed the question, what would you think about Donnie Shell and Troy Polamalu in the same defensive backfield? We're like, awesome, right? Then I'm thinking, Well, it was pretty close because we had Ryan Clark.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I was about to say, RC definitely embodied, you know,
the spirit of the human torpedo.
Yeah, I was about to say the memory and the skill set of a human, because RC has some legendary hits. I mean, when you say RC, I can't help but think about the Willis McGahee AFC Championship.
Exactly so, and that's just one of a number of legendary hits that Ryan Clark had.
Yeah, he has laid out some dudes in his career, and it is just so. Yeah, well, you're talking about we did see the light version of that. You know what I'm saying? Because RC definitely played with a disregard for his own body.
Yeah. Or
and
anybody else.
Creating maximum carnage. You know, every time he had to leave his feet or make a play. You were going to feel it.
It's going to leave a mark somewhere, that's for sure. All right, let's take a break now. It was so good to talk to Donnie Schell, and boy, we'll have to get him back next year, too, for a little extended conversation at some point in time. But that's one of the segments we want to have is our teammates, our pals, and I know that Max, hopefully, maybe we can get Trey Essex in before the end of the show here tomorrow. But certainly, I'll say this, stick around because we got more coming at you live from the locker room, Wolf Starks and the Ninjas.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, back inside the locker room. We've gotten off to a great start here. Donnie Schell, last segment, and Berea Tacos from Mike at Moe's. I guess I should say great segment for you guys, not for me.
Welcome to Moe's. Yeah, how about that? I like that. Welcome to Moe's. I don't quite have the accent to it or whatever. Is it welcome to Moe's?
The vigor.
I don't get it.
Welcome to Moe's.
So Wolf, when you walk into a Moe's
I've experienced that numerous times. Okay. But when I can't get the quite like you seem to have the arc on
welcome
it.
Welcome to Moe's.
Okay, yeah. See, I don't have that, Max. I'm not getting that down.
So you think about kind of like leaning over and like almost falling back as you're saying the phrase.
Okay. Welcome to Moe's.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go. Yay.
All I need to do is picture falling backwards. Crush.
Yeah, there it is. And look, you got all the – yeah, exactly. Now, if we see feet up in the air for the segment, I would have been like, terrible, terrible explanation, Max. But – gosh.
Way to put you're pulling stunts on the geriatric old man of the show here.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice
well, the
guy.
Good thing is I also know how small that space is. So if anything, your back would hit the wall and you'd bounce back forward. So
there you go.
Okay. It's not enough space to fall down in that room. But there was some interesting NFL news, and I thought it appropriate to talk about it because I think it's something that has a global kind of view of the sport of football in general. And, you know, what as we have the Senior Bowl going down this week, and practices are live on NFL Network, so you could see the American and the national teams practicing. I thought it was very interesting. This is something that normally doesn't happen, especially this late in quote unquote the coaching cycle. But Jeff Hafley, who was most recently the head coach of Boston College,
okay,
an ACC team that, you know, speaking of Pitt, Matt LaFleur hired him as the team's defensive coordinator. And a sitting head coach leaving a post in college to go to the NFL is a rarity. More likely it's like you're fired or there's something that happens and you get called as soon as the season ends. And that's usually the interview for another head coaching job. But, you know, Jeff Hafley took the job, was offered it by Matt LaFleur when they were figuring out how they wanted to move going forward. And, you know, I thought more so than anything else, outside of just the surprise of pulling a sitting head coach from college, but it's what Jeff Hafley said that was even more poignant and kind of gave you a sense of, you know, what's going on at the collegiate level, you know, before these young men make it to the league. And so one of the things that he was talking about was, you know, he wanted, here's what he's, and this was his direct quote, "I wanted to get back to coaching football." He's like, college coaching nowadays does not have enough coaching, and there's more fundraising than coaching going on.
Oh my.
And I just wanted to get back to coaching. And I was like, wow, that speaks volumes, right? Because that is the question. I've always wondered that, and you kind of insinuate it, but to then get verified words and corroboration on your thoughts from somebody who was in this and probably had a tight lip while he was a head coach, but now the chains are off, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, he's able to speak his mind about this because he's now at a different level. And it made me think about just some of the other guys.
Yeah.
You know, at the collegiate level are guys that want to stay in the pros versus going down and taking a college job. I mean, you think of the exit of a Jim Harbaugh from Michigan. You think about the retirement of a Nick Saban. And it just kind of makes you go, interesting, right?
Right.
What are your thoughts about, you know, college, you know, level? I mean, this is the era of NIL, transfer portals. We have a second or late signing day, which I don't get why they call it late. This was the signing day back when I was coming out of college. But the late signing day will happen next Wednesday during Super Bowl week.
Right.
Because I'll be covering that out in Vegas. But a head coach leaving it this late in the game, right? You've already had one signing class in December. You're now in February about to sign your last signing class. And, you know, you finished up transfer portal stuff until the spring. But how different is it now at the collegiate level versus the pro level, you know, not only for a head coach, but just for any coach?
You know, this is interesting, Max. This is a great topic that you brought up. And I look at this and I think to myself, how the collegiate landscape has changed. You know, Wes just pointed out, you know, college football was the same for, I don't know, 150 years or something, right? But then all of a sudden in the last 8 years, 6 years, things have ramped up and moved in college ball so crazily that you've got head coaches that now, I want to coach, I don't want to fundraise. I want to coach, I don't want to re-recruit every class that I bring in. I want to coach, and I want to coach so bad that I heard one guy say that the possibility of seeing college coaches jumping to the pros, even in a quality control position, just to get out of the college ranks and into the pros, is worthwhile to them. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, no, it's an intriguing factor because when you do think about it, how much more daunting is it when you have to go on the road recruiting, you know, during a season,
right,
in the springtime, but to find new talent, but then you have to be worried about other teams poaching your current talent. And, you know, one of the funny stories that came out in the last week or so, Jed Fish, new coach at Washington, you know, takes the Washington job after it becomes available after their head coach takes the Alabama job after Nick Saban retires.
Okay.
Jed Fish is and one of his players from Arizona now wanted to come to Washington, wanted to jump ship, wanted to follow his coach. Listen, I'm all aboard for that, right? You know, when you sign up for a job in the collegiate level, you know, or you're agreeing to go play for this school, you are signing with a coach. That's essentially, you know, when it comes to signing day and making those decisions, it's a coach that usually endears you to want to come play for them.
Right.
Like, that's the buy-in. That's the first buy-in. And now, you know, players – so I don't blame this player for wanting to go follow Coach Fish to Washington. And – the funny thing, his agent or his brand marketing specialist, however you want to call it, it's an agent, is negotiating with Washington and tells them that, how much money you got for my guy to come over there?
This is the craziness of what's happening.
Yeah. It's not about, hey, How are your academic standards? What's his classes going to be like? What is life living up, you know, up there in Washington? You know, he's coming from Arizona, which is sunny year-round, no snow.
Right.
Going to a place that's going to snow and going to be bitter weather. You know, how is it? How is all? Nope. How much are you going to pay? And then on top of that, the agent doesn't have enough wherewithal to realize that Jed Fish was the head coach of Arizona. So the guy says, you know, he was making more at University of Arizona.
Mm.
He was making about $50,000 to $80,000 more. And I'm like, you realize Jed Fish can go look at what number that kid got in the NIL deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude had overshot it by $82,000.
Oh, wow.
What the player was making, trying to negotiate. So needless to say, that player is not at University of Washington. He is still at University of Arizona as a student. But it's just, it's crazy to me that's what's happening now for 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. We're not talking about, this isn't the NFL, right?
No.
This isn't post-combine. This isn't a post-draft negotiation, free agency. No, this is, if I jump in this portal, are you going to, A, pick me up, and how much are you going to pay me to be at your place? That's what's crazy. And Coach Affley said, I don't want to deal with that anymore. I'm tired of having to re-recruit my own kids year after year to keep them on staff, and then having to go try and recruit this new talent, and all they care about is how much money you're going to give them. They don't care about anything else, academic standards, location, nothing. What's the dollar amount?
Oh, man.
And that can wear on you, right? That can wear on you if you're a coach that's like, hey, you know, when I signed you here, we had a plan for you to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, maybe even 5 years down the road and building something. You can't build with that. And think about Boston College, especially when you think like the landscape of the ACC, right?
Right.
Boston College is scraping by. You know, this is more of an academic institution
than it is
a sports institution. Yeah, they have some talent that comes out, you know, every couple of years, but it's not Alabama.
No.
It's not even Clemson or FSU, right? And you're competing
with
those
Syracuse,
guys.
It's not even Syracuse, baby.
Not even the Cuse.
That's
not
right.
Even the Orange people. Right?
That's a hockey PC school word? There, Boston College.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
hockey.
So could you imagine one? It's like, who would want those mid-level jobs? Like you said, you'd have more guys coming in and say, "Hey, I at least want to come to a quality control position because at least it's doing what my job description says."
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a football coach.
Right.
I don't want to be a sports fundraiser. I don't want to be a guy that's begging our boosters to put more money in so we can retain talent on an annual basis. Like, that's why Nick Saban retired, right?
Because I would imagine.
Yeah, you just lose the Rose Bowl, right? And the next day, you got 8 players talking about, "Hey, coach, I need more money."
Yeah.
Or I'm going somewhere else. Somebody else offered me more money.
That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. You have 8 guys jumping into the portal a day after the game. Mm. So it is very intriguing. It's going to be one that, you know, the NCAA has to come up with something. And I know it's not going to be the body itself. It'll be more so the conferences that will have to make these type of decisions or regulations in place. But it's very disheartening when you think about the game that we all love watching and you know, on Saturdays, and that Saturday pastime leads to a Sunday obsession. But the fact that it's changing so drastically that you have a head coach jumping ship, I don't think this is going to be the first. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg for years to come that you're going to see guys wanting to get it. And you know what that's going to do for the NFL? That's going to flood the talent gates.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see more of the same rinse and repeat, recycle coaches. You're going to start seeing new blood come in. And especially with the way that the NFL likes to hire younger guys now. I mean, look at Mike McDonald, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at what you're getting with that, because everybody thought it was going to be Dan Quinn's job. That's Dan. Man, Seattle, what he did there, time served? Nah. They're like, nah, we saw what happened in Atlanta. We also saw what happened with the Cowboys in that wild card game where you made Green Bay pretty much, you know, the best team and the bee's knees for a week because they just ran through you guys. It's very intriguing.
Max, one more angle for you guys real quick, and I know we got a break, but, you know, since this is Boston College specific, right? One thing that I think college football programs like the Florida Gators, right, and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Michigan and Georgia and onward, they're going to be all right. But it is the programs like Boston College that might not ever be the same in this new era. And I think in a way that affects the NFL too, because think of a guy like Luke Kuechly, right? He was not a he was not a Alabama, Ohio State, USC, Texas recruit coming out of high school. He went to Boston College, but he was there. He played for 4 years. He was coached for 4 years, stayed in the program, grew in the program, ended up being a first-round draft pick, and then one of the best linebackers, arguably the best linebacker of his generation. What happens to the Luke Kuechlys of the world that aren't the five-star recruits if they don't have programs like Boston College where they can go and receive high-level coaching and high-level play still? It's got a real ripple effect, all this stuff.
Well, and I think you look at it also – where's the Pac-12? Oh, that's right. They're no longer a conference.
Right.
And this is the starting process of crumbling that, right? I mean, it's you're seeing even with these new conference realignments and the money deals. I mean, the lion's share went to the Big Ten and went to the SEC.
Yep.
ACC and Big 12 got crumbs.
Yep.
So, you know, just to say there for every Boston College, you also have to think of Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think of a UCF.
Yeah, like WVU and Pitt, you know?
Yeah,
programs like WVU and Pitt, yeah.
Well, Syracuse would be fine.
Syracuse.
The orange.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You guys are a journalism school. It's okay. Y'all will be fine.
A guy like Isaac Seumalo, who had the opportunity to go to Oregon State to play in the Pac-12, receive high-level coaching. I mean, what happens to a guy like that now if he doesn't get a scholarship offer to Oregon, you know, or to USC? Where does he go? What's the coaching like?
Did you say Oregon?
Yeah.
Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah.
I like that accent.
Sounds like a body part, not a school.
Exactly. Just put it out there. Sounds like a body part, not a school.
That's what I'm sitting there going, Oregon.
Yeah. If he doesn't get an Oregon State and he doesn't get an Oregon, I mean, where does he go to? And the Oregon donors?
If he doesn't have an Oregon, I mean, where's that donor list?
It's pretty hard to be an offensive lineman without your organs.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that is the question, right? And how long can you do that? Because like I said, I mentioned the FSUs and the Clemsons of the world, but like you said, where's a University of Virginia, a Heath Miller type, right?
Right, perfect. You know, what about a Miami of Ohio?
You know, we better pick this up on the other side of the hour.
Because
you lead off
Let's
the
break.
Next one. We're back
we're,
to normal.
We're leading into the power
look at
hour.
Wolf producing
I will break.
It.
I know. Look at that.
Somebody's got to be an adult here.
You can't bring up college football and can't expect me to
Wesley's
not
going
lose
nuts.
The plot.
Yeah.
Wesley,
exactly. His eyes light up like when I see a cherry pie.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey. We're going to light up like a cherry pie while you guys eat some more Berea tacos from Moe's. And we'll be back with more inside the locker room here on Fox Sports Pittsburgh and SNR Radio.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.